Thanks for tuning into my new show, Get U.S. Market Ready with Italian Wine People. I'm Steve Ray, author of the book, How to Get U.S. Market Ready. And in my previous podcast, I shared some of the lessons I've learned from 30 years in the wine and spirits business, helping brands enter and grow in the U.S. market. This series will be dedicated to the personalities who have been working in the Italian wine sector in the U.S., their experiences, challenges, and personal stories. I'll uncover the roads that they walked, shedding light on current trends, business strategies, and their unique brands. So, thanks for listening in, and let's get to the interview. Hi, this is Steve Ray, and welcome to this week's episode of the Get U.S. Market Ready with Italian Wine People podcast. Today, I'm pleased to have as a guest Paul Quaglini, who is the head Italian buyer at ABC Fine Wine and Spirits, a chain of about, I think, 123 stores in Florida. And Paul and I first met on a trip to Vin Italy. So, Paul, why don't you give us a little background on you and your experience in the industry, and we'll dive into the interview.
Thanks. Thanks for the introduction, Steve. Yeah, I've been with ABC for 26 years now. Long time. I was with the Ritz-Carlton Hotel Company for 10 years before that. I have a number of degrees, Quartermaster, Sommelier 2, WSET 3. The one I'm most proud of is my Vin Italy International Academy that I passed in 2017. Funny story, how we actually met, Steve, was that year was 2016, I believe. I was not planning on going to Vin Italy, and I was in Miami at a Vin Italy trade show tasting seminar. I really went to see Ian Dagata talk about Grignolino and Tiomarasso. And after the tasting was over, I went up and I wanted to ask Ian a couple of questions. And Stevie Kim was standing next to him. And I honestly didn't know who Stevie was at the time. And the subject of Vin Italy came up. And I explained that, oh, my company is sending me to Provine this year, not Vin Italy. And Stevie looked at me and her hair stood up. And I thought, oof. I didn't make a very good first impression on her. And about a minute later, she came back and asked for my business card and said, I'll see you at Vin Italy. And sure enough, a day later, I had an invite in my inbox. So that's how we actually came to meet at Vin Italy.
I didn't know that. That's great to hear. Yeah, we won't talk much more about Stevie. When she commands, we all do. That's kind of the rule.
yeah, I guess the lesson is if you piss off Stevie, good things will come.
Yeah, that's a great line. So let's move on to ABC and tell us a little bit about the company and its position in the Florida market.
Well, we're a family-owned company, been around since 1936. We have 125, 126 stores right now from the Panhandle all the way down to Miami and on both coasts. So we have a good saturation in the company. Back in the mid-1990s, when I first joined the company, ABC decided they wanted to be a leader in the retail wine industry, not just in Florida, but in the U.S. And they really put a lot of focus at that time on becoming a fine wine retailer. At ABC, we have a very diverse demographic population in the state. It changes from county to county, and we try to cater our stores to that demographic base that's in stores. I mean, we cater to the brand new wine drinker who might be in a college town in Gainesville or Tallahassee. We have a lot of retirees in the state. So we try to offer a broad range of product to satisfy all of our customers.
One of the things I've noticed in visiting some of the stores is a pretty high level of staff knowledge, presumably then staff training on your guys' end, and help with choice, which you don't get in supermarkets or other places that don't have the dedication to wine.
Yeah, we put a great emphasis on education in our stores. We feel that's key to our success. In my role, I wear a lot of different hats in the company. I oversee a group of stores and make sure they follow programming and merchandising. I assist in resetting and opening new stores. Probably my most important role is as an educator. As I said, we invest heavily in the education of our team members. And then probably the part of my role that I enjoy the most is as the Italian wine buyer. Back in, as I said, in the 1990s, we had one wine buyer, Brad Lewis. He did a terrific job of bringing ABC into the world of fine wine. But when he retired, we decided to sort of divvy up the world into different categories. And I was fortunate enough to get Italy. Maybe it was my last name why they gave me Italy. I don't know. No, I've always had a passion for Italian wine and all things Italian. So I'm part of a team of 8 sales managers, we call ourselves, and we get together once a month still, even through COVID. It's the one meeting we've been allowed to do. We're still socially distant in the room, but it's impossible to do our job without all being together. And literally, there's loads of experience in that room. We spend one day a month basically tasting through samples and vetting opportunities for our company, for the set.
So, in terms of percentage, what percentage of your total inventory does Italian wine represent, do you think?
Right now, it's about 12 or 13% of total sales.
Which strikes me as very high. I had done an analysis of the market in the U.S., and that's one of the highest Italian to portfolio ratios that I've seen.
It is quite high. Of course, my colleagues, we're a great team together, but we're also somewhat competitive. So they always, because Italian wine by far, other than domestic U.S. and Washington State, Oregon wines, Italy is by far the country where we sell the most wine. But my colleagues like to always tell me, oh, we're not for Prosecco and Pinot Grigio. Your category would be just like ours. And I tell the French guy, I said, well, if it weren't for Champagne and Bordeaux, you would be, who can I pick on? Hungary.
We're going to talk a little bit about some of the key factors that you use when you're evaluating wines. But the one that seems to get the most attention, at least initially, when I'm having conversations with anybody, is you got scores. What is the role of scores in the way you evaluate products? And do you prioritize, or is there a hierarchy of the scores that matter to you?
Well, as a wine professional, wine lover, scores are always, we love them and hate them. We love them when they're good, and when they aren't so good, we're always like, geez, how did they only score that wine 88 points? But I think in general, the American consumer likes to see scores. It's a comfort factor. The Wine Spectator really kind of set the bar years ago with creating their 100-point rating system. And so, yes, it is a factor that we look at when we're evaluating a wine. On our shelf tags, they're a little 3x3 white shelf tag, and we try to put as much information on there without being too busy. Of course, we have the name of the wine, a brief description or tasting notes, a sweetness level, of course, the price, and then the rating, if one exists from one of the big publications here in the U.S.
Interesting that you talked about the sweetness level. Now, I don't recall seeing that, although I was there. Well, it's a while ago now. It was over a year. But that's pretty unique. Tell me about that.
Yeah, it's, again, Americans in general, they always claim they like dry, but they certainly do like some sweetness in their wines. And it, of course, sweetness is very subjective, but we just feel it gives them some sort of a guide for what type of wine they're bringing home.
So have you created a tool or something? One of the ones that I'm familiar with is the International Riesling Foundation's sweetness scale, which looks like the one you see sometimes on coffee or tea brands. It's kind of like a slider scale.
Yes, we classify wine from 1 being the driest to 8 being like a Sauternes or Trockenbaren Auslese. And the majority of dry wines, in quotations, will be in that 1, 2, or 3 range. But then as you go into sweeter styles of wines, you'll see the 5s and the 6s.
So do you score them based on residual sugar levels, data that you get from them, or what you guys taste?
Both. We look at residual sugar, and literally on those days we taste, if we decide to approve a wine, we talk about sweetness level, what it's going to look like on the shelf, and then where we're going to put those wines. We spend a lot of time and effort trying to put the right wines in the right stores.
Oh, stores. So you're not talking about shelf position or sections.
Right, right. We do have a sweet wine section in many of our stores, but typically, like if it were Oh, an Italian wine, a Lambrusco. We carry a couple of different quality Lambruscos, and one of them happens to be on the sweeter side, and then we have a drier one as well. So if somebody's picking a bottle of Vecchia Modena, for example, which is quite dry on the sweetness scale, I would say, they want to know that we might give that wine a 2 or a 3 as a sweetness level. It's just another tool for our guests to feel comfortable with.
I think that's great. I think consumers don't talk about sweetness, and they certainly don't recognize the residual sugar RS number. But I clearly see a lot of California and Oregon and Washington wines, especially the ones that are very popular and growing and widely available, are much higher on the sweetness scale than I like. That was about as tactful as I could put it. Okay, moving on to the other question I wanted to ask is, what are the other factors that you consider when you're presented with a potential new wine?
Oh, gosh, we look at everything. We look at packaging. Packaging is extremely important at a retail level. The label has to, well, it helps if it stands out, although you don't want to get too cute. I know we just last month evaluated a wine, an Italian wine, where somebody had thought it would be a good idea to put little pieces of stem of the vine glued to the bottle. And it may have looked cute, but that would be a disaster on our shelves. I mean, they would break off all the time. And so packaging is extremely important. Back label is important. We look at that.
But let me stop you right there, because that's a pet thing of mine. I think back labels are very important, that consumers hold a bottle up. They're looking for information. If they don't find it there, they'll turn it around. Now, I've seen a lot of research, market research out there saying that consumers don't read the back label. But by my anecdotal, you know, just watching people in the store, I feel very strongly that back label has to do two things. One, tell the consumer what the wine tastes like, ideally in words that they understand. So sautéed gooseberries or fried walnut skins don't help me. Okay. And then the second thing is, will it go with what I'm having for dinner tonight? Because the vast majority of wine purchased in the U.S. is consumed, you know, within 24 hours. So I tell people that that's the kind of information you need on the back label. What do you look for on back label?
Yeah, I agree with both of your points. People, guests, our guests want to see a food pairing is always great. A grape variety is also, I think, very important. Most Americans learn to drink wine by grape variety. They like Sauvignon Blanc or they like Cabernet Sauvignon. And having a grape variety, if it's not allowed on the front label, at least there on the back label, is important. There's a lot to fit on that little 4-inch square on the back of a wine bottle, but it's, to me, it's important, valuable real estate on that bottle of wine.
We were talking about some of the criteria, and I'm sure one of the ones that's important to you is what the ex-works price is and how that margin structure that you guys use in getting to a shelf price. Do you see that getting harder to work with? And are you looking at private labels as a way to augment or supplement the overall margin in the store?
Sure. We try to have a solid mix of both national brands and private labels and smaller run family wineries. That seems to work best for us. I think it gives you more credibility as a retailer. We, in our group, we say that we source and certify wines, and that's exactly what we do. Being a family run company, we like to search for family-owned wineries. And if they're in Italy, that's actually quite easy to do. And then we bring those samples back to our committee, our wine team, and we go through the certified process. If it meets all the criteria, it actually gets, one thing I didn't mention on our little shelf labels is it can often have a sourced and certified little symbol, which means that we actually went, found the wine, and then certified it. And in answer to your question, typically when we do that, the margin is better than when we just buy national brands from the big distributors.
Interesting. I really like the certification thing. I mean, it gives some personalization to it. I think one of the things that Total Wine does a really good job with their Winery Select program is the local store manager and staff comments are what's used as descriptors, not necessarily Robert Parker or Wine Spectator. they use those two.
Yeah, we do that as well. We every store has a head sales consultant. Oftentimes in our bigger stores, we'll have two or three, even four sales consultants, and they write their own personalized notes. And that's all about building a customer base for that particular store.
So when you're working with a new brand, and maybe we can divide them into two categories, talk about Italian producers. One might be just a farmer. He's producing enough that they can export, but at heart, he's a farmer. And then larger, whether they're co-ops or more conglomerates or more corporate, if you will, producers. What kind of expectations of support do you expect from them in terms of, you know, literature, shelf talkers, copy for the website and e-commerce and all that kind of stuff? What do you expect as a package of tools?
Yeah, this is a great question. When we bring a wine into our stores, we put a lot of effort into it. Again, it goes through this whole vetting process to begin with. If we, for example, if we were looking for a Grignolino, which we're not, but if we were, I would go and solicit 4, 5, 6 different Grignolinos, taste them myself, and then bring the 2 or 3 best examples before the committee. So we do a lot of work beforehand. What we expect from a winery or co-op is an investment in their time and continued support. We work with a lot of importers, a lot of different importers. And sometimes as an Italian winemaker, I think it's eye-opening for them to come into our stores for the first time because they see, oh my God, I'm competing with 3,000 different wine labels from all over the world. So it's important that they constantly try to keep focus on their wines. Again, we're going to do our part to make it successful. We have wine emotion dispensing machines in our stores that we'll sample a new wine on. But constantly keeping focus on your brand is very important. One of the importers we work with, Alborello Imports, we've had a relationship with them for 20 years. And every year, a group of their winemakers that come in through Alborello to us they'll spend an entire week here in Florida, and they will do in-store tastings across the state. They'll pick 4 or 5 different locations. They'll be in Miami one night. They'll be in Tampa the next night, Orlando, Jacksonville. And during the day, they teach classes to our staff. So a lot of these producers, we've had relationships now for nearly 20 years, and they come back every year. They've built customer loyalty in their wines. These wineries oftentimes, and this doesn't happen right away, but oftentimes they'll sponsor sales contests. So we'll pick a time period of maybe 2 or 3 months, and whichever stores sell the most of their particular wines will sponsor trips. So many, many of our sales consultants have been overseas, have been to Italy in particular, to visit these wineries. And that kind of investment, it's expensive for the winery, I'll be the first to say, but it builds not just guest customer loyalty, but it builds loyalty of our team members in the stores, and they want to sell these wines because they want a chance to go back to Italy.
Yeah, doesn't everybody? Have you been watching that Stanley Tucci series where he's going to 5, 6 different regions? He just did Bologna last night. It was fabulous. Yeah, and they don't mention wine at all, but clearly wine and food, as you and I know, are paired together. You can't separate the two in Italy.
Yeah, that's the thing I love about Italian wine the most, is it's not just the wine. It's the history, the culture, the food, Italian hospitality, the stories. And that's what sells wine. There are a lot of places to buy wine in Florida. We all know that the grocery chains sell more wine than anybody. But if you can walk into one of our stores and have somebody hand you an artisanally made small boutique winery and have the sales consultant say, I was there 2 months ago. I was there last month. It's a fabulous place. They have a bed and breakfast. You should go and visit yourself. It's a whole different kind of buying experience, in my opinion.
Yeah. So that kind of raises a related question, which does come up a lot with Italy, is the influence and importance of native or autochthonous varietals. Problem or, I mean, is that an opportunity or an obstacle? You talked about Grignolino, for example.
Yeah, I would say that before COVID, it was absolutely nothing but an opportunity. This whole past year has presented its challenges. Hand selling has been more difficult, but in general, I absolutely think it's an opportunity to turn people on to these indigenous, exciting grape varieties that people may have never tried before. And some are actually building some traction with us. I mean, 5-6 years ago, I don't think we carried any Falanghina. And now we have a couple of different Falanghinas that people have embraced. Our guests have really embraced, and they're solid performers for us now.
So is it, obviously, Falanghina is relatively easy to pronounce compared to some Greek names like Aguritico and so on. But still in all, they're a challenge for people. Comments on that?
They can be a challenge. Again, we do a lot of in-store tasting. In our stores, we have the wine emulsion machines, as I said. And if you have a knowledgeable, experienced sales consultant in the store, and they can offer a taste of a wine and say, this is Aglianico, and, you know, get that in the guest's mind, then that guest likes to go home and taste with their friends and say, oh, yeah, this is an Aglianico. Haven't you ever tried this before? It's fantastic wine.
Yeah, it's that knowledge. The way I've phrased it is the way to market wines is to get people to tell your story in their words to their friends. And certainly social media has made that a lot easier and more powerful. But that brings us to our next subject, which is e-commerce. It's become really important with COVID and so forth. Where is ABC relative to e-commerce?
Well, e-commerce was becoming a thing even before COVID. We were gearing up with BOPIS. Buy online, pick up in stores was becoming popular. And then with COVID, it absolutely just exploded with all the online delivery companies. We've just recently actually teamed up with FedEx ourselves, and we're now offering free delivery on orders over $50 in the state of Florida. So I think we're the first and only major retailer who's using FedEx. And that business is just going to continue to grow. I don't see it slowing down even after COVID's gone. People, you know, Amazon has spoiled all of us. We want everything delivered to the door. I just think there are some things that call me old fashioned, but I like walking into a wine shop and speaking to my local wine consultant and maybe tasting something from the wine dispensing machine and having a conversation. And I know I'm old fashioned. A lot of people just like to press a couple keys on their phone and have the wine delivered. But we're well aware that it's important.
So a follow-up question on that. One of the things I advocate to my clients is they need to put together a depository, if you will, of assets. So it'll be high-resolution photos of the bottle, high-resolution of the photo curved on the bottle, flat, you know, some pretty pictures of the vineyard, critics' notes, maybe winemakers' notes, food and wine pairing type things. Because all that is the kind of content people are looking for online. And there you have infinite space to cover that. You know, obviously, it's not just a 4-square-inch shelf talker.
Yes, absolutely. Website is something that in that list of factors on what we're deciding, if a company has or a winery has a good website, which everyone should in 2021.
Must, maybe that's.
Must. They must have a good website. Very important. Because we all know, walk into any of our stores and half of the shoppers, half of our guests are shopping with their phone and they're looking up on their phone, whether they're using a Vivino app or whatever it is, many of them are looking for research. It's so easy today. So a good website is very important.
Well, let me push on that. So talk about Vivino and Wine Searcher, for example. They have the label recognition technology. Those are certainly tools that I use. And what I was talking about optimizing your content online is by providing that content and having it reside in Vivino and Wine Searcher, as retailers are looking for content to scrape to put into their, they're not going to go to the website per se. Maybe if you did, you went to the trade portion of the website for the trade assets to be able to download without having to ask high-res images. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. Yes. We'll put them on our own website. So we demand the high-resolution photo. Absolutely.
Kind of running out of time here. As I told you, I'd like to end the conversations here with a big takeaway. Is there something that of what we discussed that either suppliers or people in the trade can do or use or put to use or incorporate in their work right away from some of the things that we talked about?
Well, I think that, again, the word investment comes back to my mind, that getting your wine into ABC is an investment. It's a partnership. That's what we're looking for.
And I would jump in and say this, getting it in is just the beginning. Getting it out is the objective.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You can sell us a couple of pallets of wine. And if you don't do anything else besides that, we're still going to do our part. We're going to promote that wine. We're going to do what we can to make it sell. But if you want a long-term relationship, you need to invest in us. We want continued support. You know, we want education. We want stories to tell our guests so that when they walk out of an ABC store with a sourced and certified brand, they're thinking, wow, I got a really great bottle of wine.
And a couple of comments that they can use when they're sharing it with their friends and say, let me tell you about this wine.
Absolutely.
A big thanks to Paul Quaglini, the Italian wine buyer at ABC Fine Wines and Spirits, a major chain in Florida, for sharing his time with us and also some of the insights on how the business works in the United States. So this is Steve Ray from Get U.S. Market Ready with Italian Wine People. Thanking you for listening, and we look forward to having you join us again next week. Paul, thank you.
Thanks, Steve.
This is Steve Ray saying thanks again for listening on behalf of the Italian Wine Podcast.